banking is not a problem. Banking, I think, happens. It's sort of like breathing. Breathing is not the problem, but if I outsource my breathing to somebody else, that's going to be a problem, you know? Maybe it's okay in emergency circumstances. That's what ventilators are for, right? But if we just live our entire life on a ventilator, that's not health. That's not thriving. And the same is true with banking. The function of banking happens. It's the water in which we live in. It's the process of moving money back and forth. And I'm not talking about checking and savings accounts here. I'm talking about the use and access to lines of credit and capital acquisition and strategy that we all use, whether we're employees and just buying cars and vacations, or if we're a business owner and we need access to capital for inventory or equipment. All of us are in the banking business. We just happen to be sitting on the wrong side of the banker's desk.
What do you propose?
I would like to say, what if you could be your own source of financing?
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy Show with your host, Annie Nelson. And today on the show, we have a special guest, Mark Willis. And Mark is a certified financial planner, a two-time number one best-selling author, and the owner of Lake Growth Financial Services, a financial firm in Chicago, Illinois. Over the years, he has helped hundreds of his clients take back control of their financial future and build their businesses with proven, tax-efficient financial solutions. He specializes in building custom-tailored financial strategies that are unknown to typical stock jockeys, attorneys, or other financial gurus. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks, Anne. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So you are based in Chicago, Illinois, and I believe you think differently about your money and your economy and your future. So can you tell us a bit about your background and how it led you down the path into the financial services?
Sure. My background was not in financial services originally. It was sort of a stumbling into this practice, this work, as a result of our own financial difficulties. My wife and I graduated in 2008 from our college degrees with no plan to pay off the six figures of student loan debt, Anne, that we had accumulated. And we graduated with great timing in 2008 when the markets were crashing. So it was at that moment that we very much got interested in our own financial plan and started discovering some eye-opening strategies that I had not been taught. I don't know about the rest of the world, but I certainly wasn't given a real decent financial education straight through graduate degrees. And it felt like I was getting a late start on something that should have been taught early on in my life. Certainly would have been better off. So for me, it was a wake-up call on a number of fronts. One, that debt matters. Two, that Wall Street is not all it's cracked up to be. And we can talk about traditional retirement plans in the United States, but in general, the investment mentality that the entire world has really fallen under in the last 50 years. And three, that the biggest and most important part of our financial life has more to do with not where we're saving money or investing money, but what we're doing when we make those purchases that we all have to make in life. So the function of banking became the centerpiece of our entire financial practice, because honestly, I believe that how we buy stuff, cars, vacations, real estate, and our retirement income will be the difference between poverty and a life of financial independence.
That's very interesting. And it's a completely different take on life and and on the traditional way of banking. So are you saying that you are firing the banker?
That's right. Yeah. So banking is not a problem. Banking, I think, happens. It's sort of like breathing. Breathing is not the problem. But if I outsource my breathing to somebody else, that's going to be a problem. You know, maybe it's okay in emergency circumstances. That's what ventilators are for, right? But if we just live our entire life on a ventilator, that's not health. That's not thriving. And the same is true with banking. The function of banking happens. It's the water in which we live in. It's the process of moving money back and forth. And I'm not talking about checking and savings accounts here. I'm talking about the use and access to lines of credit and capital acquisition and strategy that we all use, whether we're employees and just buying cars and vacations, or if we're a business owner and we need access to capital for inventory or equipment. All of us are in the banking business. We just happen to be sitting on the wrong side of the banker's desk.
What do you propose?
I would like to say, what if you could be your own source of financing? What if you could recapture all of the interest and finance charges and payments that you currently spend on debt to mortgages, student loan companies, auto loans, credit card payments, and you could become your own source of financing? You would be able to essentially live much more comfortably without having to take on additional risk. Let me tell you a quick statistic. In the United States, according to the U.S. Commerce Bureau here, 1/3 of our income, about 37%, currently goes to servicing debts on the averages here in the United States. 1/3. And I would presume that that's a similar statistic in other countries, Western countries as well. 1/3 of our monthly income going to service debt. That is an incredible number if you stop and think about it for a minute. And you know, that means 1/3 of our day, we're slaves to a bank, not working for ourselves. And if you add taxes on top of that, that might be half of our day gone before we're actually working for ourselves. This is felt by many clients we talk to. Many people have a sense and a feeling something's not right, that they're working really hard but not getting very far. The average American does not even have $400 in their savings account to cover an emergency. The part of the reason is we've had to move from being a saving culture to a debt culture over the last 40 or 50 years. And for that, what we can save, the little bit that we can put into our retirement accounts, has to go into riskier and riskier assets like 401ks, IRAs, mostly tied to stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. But what if you could recapture your money so that literally you reclaim 1/3 of your day so you don't have to chase that higher rate of return, but rather you can become your own source of financing so that you can pay for the things you need in life, the cars, the vacations, etc., the business opportunities, the real estate investments, without having to be slaves to a bank. It just makes the entire financial portfolio a lot simpler. Maybe you stop working 60 hours a week and you can start working 24 or 30 hours a week as a result.
Well, that's fascinating and it's very appealing, but how would you go about doing this?
Yeah, you know, you need a mindset shift first. So we talked through that mindset shift a little bit first, Anne. And you're right, there still needs to be a tool belt with some tools in it that help you do this. And every country is going to have a different set of tools that you can rely on. In the United States, there's a tool that we use for the banking function. It's a modernized form of something that's been around for over 200 years. There's a really old-fashioned type of life insurance in the United States called dividend-paying whole life insurance. And it is available in other countries as well. And basically what it allows you to do is fund the policy, the life insurance policy, with your premiums, your contributions, the money you're putting into that policy. And it starts to accumulate a fund called a cash value that you can grow and use and access like a bank. It's not technically a bank. It's not, you know, an issued bank chartered bank, but you can use that cash value as a line of credit to yourself. So you become your own source of financing. You can borrow from yourself, pay yourself back, And the policy works almost like a source of capital for your business, for your family, for your real estate investments. And what I've found is when you use that source of money for your strategic needs, again, it could be your children's college, could be that boat you wanted to buy, but however you use the money, now you're in control. When you access that capital, it does two things. It continues to grow on a guaranteed basis every single year, whether you borrow against it or not. And I just want everyone to hear that again, because that's kind of unbelievable. If you use this policy, if it's designed correctly, the policy will continue to grow compound, uninterrupted, even when you use the money as collateral for loans that you might need. So like if you had $100,000 in a cash value policy, and then let's say you borrowed $30,000 to buy a car, that year the policy will continue to grow and compound on the entire $100,000 as if you had not touched a dime of the money.
Wow. Haven't heard of that one before.
Yeah. Well, if folks are familiar with how HELOCs work, home equity lines of credit, again, this is a very similar concept. You know, if I have a mortgage on my house or even a HELOC on my house, my home grows even though I have debt against my house, right? If my home is worth a certain dollar amount and I borrow some fraction of that for a mortgage or a HELOC, my home doesn't stop growing, right? It's whatever the neighborhood says it's worth. The same holds true with the policy. My policy was not liquidated. I didn't spend that money out of my policy. I simply used the cash value as collateral for a loan from the life insurance company. Now, it's really kind of cool, Ann, because you can continue to get that growth on that money because the insurance company is saying, hey, you know what? If you pass away and you never pay us that loan back, we're going to just simply deduct your loan from your death benefit. So instead of getting $1 million to the family, maybe they get $970,000. Wow. To the family.
As long as you tell the family as well.
Right. Yeah. So they'll get 970. They'll have to scratch together, you know, have to live on that, I guess. But then they also get that car, hopefully too, that you have in the front driveway.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so it sounds like a terrific strategy. Do you know how many people are taking advantage of this?
I only can tell you what I know of the United States. I'm aware of about 500,000 policyholders, whole life insurance policyholders in the United States. So there's maybe two or three times that own Roth IRAs, to give you some sense of, you know, the scope of this. It's very old. Back in the 1940s, half of all American savings was inside life insurance policies. And we've moved very much away from life insurance for a few very good reasons. So again, I don't think it's a cure-all, and I don't recommend folks put all their pennies into a whole life policy. But, and you know, one of the things that I do know is we used to be much more solvent as a culture. We used to have a ton of savings. And in fact, that same U.S. Commerce Bureau statistic, you go back to 1940, we didn't have one-third of our income going to service debt. Quite the opposite. We had one-third of our income going into life insurance and savings buckets, annuities, life insurance, and the like. Now, we save only about 5% of our income, and that's to cover our retirement, our kids' college, our flat tires, our medical emergencies. So back when we used life insurance as a place to save, my personal belief is we were a lot more liquid, a lot more solvent. Heck, you know, when we went through World War II in the 1930s and 40s, we didn't need a stimulus check. We didn't need a bailout from the government. In fact, the government asked the United States citizens to help fund the war effort. It came from savings. It came from life insurance. I don't know that we could do that again this generation as we go through the coronavirus, because we just don't have much in savings.
Right.
So if you've got cash savings, you've got the ability to sustain a rainy day. The old saying, you know, save for a rainy day. The whole life policy is a great place to save.
Well, thanks for explaining that. And what age should people be looking at taking out these policies? Would it be more beneficial to do it younger, I assume. But could someone a bit older, say in their 50s, still benefit from taking out a policy like this?
Well, yeah, I'd say my parents could have gotten one on me when I was born, and that would have been even better. In fact, I've got a little daughter. She's got a policy on her. This is not a good fit for folks who cannot save money. That's one thing I'd say, because it does still mean we're packing money away into the policy. It is your cash you're using as collateral for cars, vacations, etc. So it still means saving. So we are preparing for retirement with this policy. It is a stream of income. In the United States, it's income tax free to access money out of life insurance, which is pretty cool. But to answer your question, yeah, the younger the better. But I would also say the policies that we design are not about the expensive death benefit. The older we are, the more expensive we are to insure in terms of life insurance. And the way we design the policies is we trim down, we try to extract as much expense out of the policy. That includes the commissions, and the death benefits are reduced as a way to kind of get the expenses out of the policy, so that we can have a whole lot more cash, money that you can use for your life on this side of heaven. So I've actually had folks, our average client age is in their mid-50s, but the numbers could go up and down and sideways. We've got folks much younger than that and folks even much older than that as well.
Right. So it sounds like you can tailor this type of policy to an individual.
That's right. Yeah, each person that we would sit down with, I don't know if that would be a good fit for everybody. Again, there's the purpose of that policy is really to solve the banking function in our life. Again, we are already in the banking business. So what we typically do, Anne, is just say, all right, what are we trying to do? What is our money trying to accomplish here? What are we trying to do as a family? I think certainly investments have an important place. Real estate has an important place. But I'd say some predictable, liquid, accessible money that's guaranteed to grow for the rest of my life and give me tax-free income, that should have a place in my portfolio at the same time. So it's just a part of the overall picture.
So what are they called?
We refer to these kind of to simplify things. We call it bank on yourself type policies. Bank on yourself. So if folks want to research this further, just search Google for bank on yourself and you'll find out more. Or you can find our website, Not Your Average Financial Podcast. We've got 100 plus episodes on this strategy and similar strategies for how you can use it for investing and use it for guaranteed income and retirement and more.
Yep. And are you able to sell these policies to anyone in the world, or are you restricted on United States?
I personally work in all 50 states, and our firm does. I know that Canada offers this, the United Kingdom and Australia have policies that are similar, but I don't personally have a way to do things outside of the country. But I do have folks in Canada, especially, that I can work with, and I'd be happy to answer questions from folks in any country.
Well, thanks for explaining that. And you've also used this strategy effectively with business people that are building their businesses and not just retirement savings.
That's right. Yeah. To many business owners, they are looking to grow their best asset, which is their business. Oftentimes the business has the best returns. You have the most control over your business. You can see it, you can feel it. You see the inventory, you see your customers. So for many business owners, they want to focus not on a retirement account, but on their business, rightfully so. So what we have done for many business owners, myself included, by the way, is we set up a policy, a whole life policy, that's there for the purpose of helping to strategically align your assets for your business. So I'm packing money into a policy that I know will be there anytime my business needs a line of credit. My business borrows from the Bank of Mark. It's pretty cool, and I charge it an interest rate, by the way. I'm a greedy old banker when it comes to my business, since my business is a captive customer to the Bank of Mark. And every person might at least consider having a line of credit to your business from a policy, because then even when banks stop lending and it looks like they're about to start the next down cycle where they stop lending to businesses, that's going to be an important line of credit, another source of oxygen for your business to stay alive.
It's interesting how banks have changed over the years. I know when I was in my early 20s, you would go to the bank and apply for a personal loan if you wanted to buy, say, a car. But these days, it seems as though they just say, or get a credit card, and they have gone away from personal loans altogether. And it's interesting that you're saying now that you believe they're going to step away from loaning businesses.
Mm-hmm. Well, think of it this way. You look back on every financial crisis, at least since I've been alive and aware, banks tend to stop lending right when businesses need it the most. There's a great quote by Mark Twain, and the quote is, "A banker is a fellow who'll lend you his umbrella when the sun is shining, but wants it back the minute it starts to rain."
That's really good.
And that's about right. I would rather be the banker so that I know that I've got a guaranteed line of credit for my business. Because let's be honest, cash is oxygen for our businesses. And if I've got a guaranteed line of credit from my policy to my business in the midst of tough times, like many businesses are going to be going through right now,
yes.
Guess who's going to survive this versus who's going to have to shutter their business?
That's correct. I know in Australia, in the last 3 months, things have been very tough for businesses, and the banks came up in, they were encouraged by our federal government, of course, but the banks came up with having a holiday from repaying your loans, and it was mainly for people with housing loans, and you just had to apply online, and it just happened. So banks' profits are going to be down, but that's mm-hmm. what's happened here. Many people have gone and applied for having a holiday from repaying their loans for 3 months. So the share price of all the banks have gone down considerably on the stock market of the Australian banks.
Yeah.
They know their profits are going to be less for in the next 6 months.
Well, the same is true on this side of the pond as well. The financials are looking weaker than ever as I look at the stock tickers.
Yes. Yeah, so before we finish up then, it's interesting that we've touched on the stock market. Seeing we're in this time of the coronavirus and uncertainty, have people been panicking about where their investments are and how their investments are doing, or wanting to change their investments? Or do you see this as a time as not to change?
Well, it's a great question. I'd say the trouble is we're kind of stuck on a roller coaster that we don't know how to get off of.
Yeah.
You know, if you asked any typical investment advisor, when should I sell? Should I sell when the market's up? Well, no, don't do that. You'll have a taxable gain. Don't get out now. The market's going up. If you say, well, wait a minute, now the market's down tomorrow. Now it's tomorrow and the market's down like crazy. Should I get out now? Don't get out now. Don't look at it now. The trouble is any kind of volatility, and the fancy word is beta, any kind of beta in your portfolio, any loss or gain, 1 year of loss destroys your compound growth.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm getting an annual return of 10% in years 1, 2, and 3, I've got an average return at that point of 10%. But in year 4, if I have a negative 10%, I have to get 30% the following year just to get back to my average return of 10% average. That's the hard part of this. Anytime you lose money, it's unacceptable because you've lost that compounding growth on that money forever. You cannot get it back. So the trouble is, you know, we don't typically notice that in our portfolios. So yeah, I'm seeing a lot of folks waking up to the fact that we've had 3 major market crashes in the last 20 years in the United States stock market. We've had the dot-com bubble. We've had the real estate financial crisis of 2008. And now this, you know, whatever we're in right now, the COVID crisis. Now, for a lot of folks, third time's the charm, and they're ready to get off that roller coaster and put their money somewhere where they can guarantee, know that it's going to be there when they go to look for it.
Yes. I see at the moment the stock markets are actually trying to rally. So who knows?
But we had a great day yesterday as of May 18th, and today it's down here in the States anyway. What's tomorrow? You know the future since you live in 14 hours ahead of me.
Well, it seems as though that could be a topic for another show where we would get a more consistent return on our investments.
For sure. Yeah, I've got at least five major things that we need to be aware of in our portfolios and some strategies for how to get more consistent returns without taking unnecessary risk.
Okay. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you today, and I am sure the listeners would be really keen to hear, to learn and hear more about how you can be your own banker. And in summary, could you just tell us a bit about the strategy again and how easy is it to start one up?
Sure. Yeah. Again, it comes down to this. By using the right tool, you can accomplish the right thing. Where you put your money makes it do different things. And it sounds obvious, but it's so true. You know, if we have real estate, our money will act different than if it's in a savings account or a shoebox or a stock investment account. So where do you want your money to live? That's a question only you can answer. I can't. Nobody can answer that question except you. So once you know what you want your money to do for you, if the bank on yourself concept makes sense, here's what the money does. It's going to grow on a guaranteed basis every single year, no matter what's happening in the stock markets. Guaranteed. That's what's in the contract. Two, the money is accessible to you for any reason. And when you use the money in the policy as a line of credit to yourself, it will continue to grow uninterrupted. Show me anywhere else in the universe that does that. I can't find it. Third, this is a, if done correctly, it can be accessed with some significant tax advantages. Tax-free income, if we do it right, here in the United States, it's always been tax-free as long as we've had an income tax system in the United States, which is since 1913. Pretty cool. And then finally, it is life insurance. So you're always going to leave your family more than you'll ever be able to save for them in the policy. Guaranteed, that's how life insurance works. We're able to put money into a policy as premium and then leave our families more than we could ever save for them. That's it in a nutshell. If folks want to learn more about this concept, no doubt I would have more questions. It's something I've been dealing a lot with. And you know, I didn't jump into this industry looking at life insurance. I was kind of your traditional, oh so average investment guy, buy term, invest the rest, all that. Find the stock market as our knight in shining armor. But it was in the midst of the Great Recession, the last recession anyway, that I discovered this strategy. And I think it's been worth investigating ever since. It's been a lot of fun for me and my wife and our clients all around the country to learn more about it. So if you want to learn more, go to notyouraveragefinancialpodcast.com. And check us out. See if you'd like to chat with us. You can schedule a meeting with me, request a meeting right there on the website, or you can subscribe to our show there as well.
Well, thanks very much for sharing this unusual strategy. I'll call it unusual because I'd say it's not typical, but it sounds extremely rewarding.
It's not so average, which is why we call it Not Your Average Financial Podcast. So thank you. Thanks for having me on your show, Anne. It's been a true pleasure.
You're welcome. And thanks for sharing this on the Retire Well, Retire Happy podcast show. We've been here today with your host, Annie Nelson, and our special guest, Mark Willis from notyouraveragefinancialpodcast.com and the Lake Growth Financial Services. Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.